talk about cars. Ferrari, GTO, Bentley, CRX, and even down to your great-granddad's Peerless. Welcome to No Driving Gloves, the car talk authority, where experience, knowledge, and controversy share the same seat. Enjoy the ride. Now your hosts, John and Derek.
Man, I probably need to get me a new headshot there. That's back with my old shades and my long hair.
You look like yourself.
Buzz cut thing. And I'm back to the old cans, if you remember, way back. I don't know. I guess I did those probably. Let's try this in English, John. Probably was wearing those back in 19 when we were doing some live streaming.
I can bust mine out at some point. I think I have a brand new set of them that I never wound up using because I found this pair of earbuds that worked so well. So literally a brand new pair of those cans sitting in a box.
Maybe I should trade you because I got a new microphone that's I don't like because it's silver.
Oh,
that I could trade you for your headgear there.
There we go. All right. Hey, John, how's it going? We're back for another week of No Driving Gloves.
Oh, I don't know. Staying busy. I can't remember. I said last week. Got the new house going. Going to move the big stuff there this weekend. Studio staying at my present location for another couple of weeks. So I've got a lot of overlap between the two places. So I'm going to be able to build out the new studio perfectly this time.
See, now that is deep pockets. When you can own a mansion like you just bought and keep the apartment for a while, that's when we know who has the deep pockets.
You mean my lake townhouse and then the new place over at the, sorry. It's not on top of the mountain, but it's on the mountain.
That mountain house. Look at this. He's got a mountain house retreat. How big is the garage?
Well, actually I'm going to the mountain house retreat because of the overlap here in 2 weeks.
the big question that we have to know is how big is the garage at the new house?
It's not that large of a place. It's just well laid out. It's a two car, but you could actually get two Suburbans in it. And on that topic, I bought my first EV this week.
Bought your first what?
I bought an EV this week.
Oh, EV.
Mm-hmm.
Electric vehicle. So you bought an RC car?
No.
No?
I bought one of those, I think it's Ego lawnmowers.
Oh, yes.
God, and that sucker's nice. Sounds like a vacuum. It's almost like you can mow in silence.
Nice. Now, is it a push mower?
It's a push mower. The new place is about 1,700 square feet. Same square footage as the townhouse, but much better layout. But no, it's a self-propelled, and I really analyzed because you pay for the battery. And it's kind of like buying a Tesla. Let's say you buy a battery this size, you get this much mowing out of it. You pay a little bit more, you get a battery this size. You pay this much more, you get a battery this size. And I bought exactly the battery size I thought I would need. Didn't go over the top. So I got a 6 amp hour battery for it and mowed the yard. And I didn't even drop the little lights going or in quarter segments. I didn't even drop 25% of a charge. So I didn't overbuy for a change.
All right. So, John, going EV. Next thing you know, you're going to get a car from your buddy, Elon.
Not sure. There's a lot of news in the last couple of days about Tesla going bust.
That's why you need to buy a car from him. Help him out.
Got to have that after dealer support.
Yeah.
I'd say if I was probably to pull the trigger right now, it would either be a Hyundai or if a bank was really nice to me, it would be a Rivian.
Yeah. Which Rivian?
I would get the pickup. I'm not an SUV guy. So that's where we are. How's your car life there, Derek?
Oh, you know, it's going all right. I'm always irritated, John. I think I've come to realize that I turned 40 over just over a year ago, and I've be I've always been a little old man, but now I've become the irritated little old man.
Oh, and Jason, I do talk about ED too.
Yeah. But I think what it's come down to is I need to just ignore the, what's a polite word for it? The
general public.
Ridiculous automotive history posts that exist in the social media world because they drive me crazy. I've commented on a couple lately. I'm probably going to get myself in some kind of trouble at some point, but it's just aggravating when people perpetuate misinformation of automotive history. And I don't know, maybe I've got myself to a point where I feel like I'm on a mission to correct the misinformation and the misguided, thoughts of automotive history, but I cannot take it anymore, John. I don't know. I don't even know what to say about it.
Well, I know the post you're talking about, I think. Is it the one about Abraham Lincoln suing the Ford Motor Company about the Lincoln name?
I think it was that one. Yeah. It involved Ford. You're close. It involved Ford. I'll give you a hint. It involved the year, that famed year, 1964 and a half.
They made a lot of Mustangs that year.
Oh, a ton, John, a ton. Turns out actually everybody owns one. Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't have backup lights.
Yeah.
Except the one that's on display at the Henry Ford Museum.
Yeah. Weird. That one has 00001. So weird. And you know what the first digit of the VIN number is?
Zero.
No, it's 5. Do you know why?
Because 5 represents half.
No, because you are. Somebody's going to come back on the post and say that. They're going to be like, I don't know what you're talking about. 5 means half.
It would have started with a 0 if it was going to be a whole year.
And that is the flawed automotive history thinking that I'm just going to quit.
They did have that 60th celebration at Barber's last weekend. I did not make it over. I've got one of my old coworkers from Barber's. I don't even think he made it over. And he's got a brand new 2024 Dark Horse in Grabber Blue. So.
Well, it's like all those 1983 and a half Corvettes that are out there running around that the, Corvette world is all proud of. Oh, wait, they don't do that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, that's Corvette's loss.
Yeah, they could be making more money on their cars. Oh, I got an 83 and a half.
You think I'm getting on Marketplace here and I'm buying an early VIN number 84 and I'm going to start calling it an 83 and a half.
I wonder if we could pull it off. Probably not. Anyway, I'm just, there's too much, as I commented in my post, we really got to stop perpetuating these, this misinformation and incorrect data about automotive history, because it only, in my opinion, hurts the field and the accuracy of it. It's just, it's painful to watch, John.
Well, that's what inspired the topic for this episode. Why do we have certain things in the automotive hobby? Why is automotive history so incorrectly written? Why this? Why that? And mine, what set me off was a post about an EV and all these people talking about EVs being for the environment and saving the environment. And there's new data out this week about how it's reduced so much CO2 and, carbon emissions in California. And there's great data because 8% or 9% of cars sold in this area are EVs, but 1% of the cars sold in North Dakota are these EVs. So we can get direct pollution correlations. And then you get the posts. Well, it takes, the Caterpillar Earth Mover uses 1,000 liters of diesel every 12 hours. And that's not including all the other equipment to make the batteries or the coal that we burn. I thought the original idea behind an EV is so that we still had mobility when we ran out of gasoline. I think that's what's always inspired, you know, the reason EVs were popular 130 years ago was the unavailability of gasoline, even in a time that we didn't have any electricity. Now we have a lot of gasoline. We still don't have electricity and we have EVs back. And it just kind of irritates me that I think the reason we had the city car in the 70s and Ford and General Motors experimented with their electric Rangers and their electric S10s and all this stuff throughout the years was more in case we ran out of gas, which was the biggest fear and seemed to be in the 80s and 90s. And then we got this green movement and Subaru lovers and everything. And all of a sudden, EVs are about the environment. And that's, you know, we all know that's a lie. And I guess it just irritates me that we got to look at a whole picture. It does this here and it does that there and it damages this. And our gas cars do the same thing. Our hydrogen cars will do the same thing. Our perpetual motion vehicles are about the only thing that are not going to do the same thing. And that's...
Let me know when that works out for you, John. Perpetual motion vehicles. Yeah. No, I mean, it is the thing. It's and that is an excellent place to start with it because EVs have been around since the late 1800s. I mean, they, you know, early experimentation with electric motors. We've understood batteries for a very long time. And in the earliest days of the automobile, the horseless carriage, the self-propelled vehicle, whatever you want to call it, obviously the very first one and very first few were typically steam powered because we understood steam engines mostly from not only the stationary steam engines that existed, but some of the early steamships that were around when in the 1770 that people started looking at and understanding that, hey, we can kind of figure out how to make this work on land. And as the, you know, petrol internal combustion engine comes about as originally as a stationary engine, right? Otto Cycle. Nicholas Otto was a person, people, O-T-T-O. And, you know, we understand all that. Then we get the people start playing around with, petroleum-based fueled engines, gasoline. And that is the biggest problem. It was hard to get your hands on at that time. So a lot of automotive manufacturers built electric vehicles because we understood and could more easily obtain batteries and electric motors that could self-propel vehicles in cities because that's where most of the driving was done at that time until we had bigger breakthroughs in, you know, being able to get gasoline out to more areas and have it be readily available along with all the other petroleum products, you know, grease, oil that you need for an internal combustion engine. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. EVs have been around because at first they were what was really the easiest to produce and ensure that the, you know, people who were actually buying these vehicles could keep them maintained and operate them without needing to go hunting down special fuels that they didn't have easy access to.
They were also much cleaner. And that's one of the things.
Cleaner, quieter, simpler to drive, all of it.
It's those same qualities that are bringing them back. Just, you know, cleaner, quieter, no maintenance, don't have to stop and get gas. And I think that's one of the biggest reasons for the wealthy and celebrities driving EVs. They could care less. A lot of celebrities aren't car people. They could care less what they drive, but they like driving their Tesla because they don't have to go to a gas station and be accosted by us.
Hey, aren't you Matt Damon? Hey, how you doing? Leave me alone. I'm just getting gas.
No, I should say so. No, I want to answer Jason's question real briefly. We'll go off topic.
I will say, you know, there are certain celebrities that we all know that don't mind stopping to get gas, you know, because they still drive all of their old cars and especially around L.A. So, hey, they even take them out to the local cruise inns and, you know, go to the hamburger stand with them. So more power to them. So yeah, Jason threw up a question here. And after we mentioned the wonderful 1983 and a half Corvettes, he talked about the actual 1983 Corvettes, Jason. So he said, didn't the 83 Corvettes, 1983 have Corvettes have round gauges? I'll try to condense this story as much as possible. Yes, the 1983 pre-production run of Corvettes had round analog gauges in them. Okay. They were working on the digital dash at the time. They were afraid that there were a few too many issues with the digital dash still, that there might be some failures with it, things like that. They didn't really feel that it was quite ready to go in those pre-production cars. They had hoped by the time they had everything sorted out for the 83 model year, they would be able to put them in. But as we know, they didn't get everything sorted out. So yes, the 83 pre-production cars that were run around and tested had an analog instrument panel gauge cluster that had the round gauges and were analog. And there are, I believe, two of those dash, well, I should say three of those dashes known to exist. Obviously, the one that is in the 83 Corvette at the Corvette Museum, and one that is in the museum collection that is a just, you know, out of the car, just itself, the gauge cluster, and then another one that is in private hands that it went up for sale on eBay a couple years ago. And I'm not sure if it sold or not. I didn't really keep track of it because at the time I wasn't worried about it because the Corvette Museum already had one in the collection. So
I was trying to look something up because we talked about it a few years ago. And I
well,
know.
Don't you have the fancy handy dandy way of pulling up an image on the live stream now, John? You can
well,
probably
actually,
just go to Google
you,
and get the image and pop it up.
Well, actually, if you go to the December 17th, 2018 post of on Facebook of what do I want to say? No driving gloves. There is a image of it. And for those of you watching, if I can get the right buttons here, I think that's it. There you go.
That is it. There it is, Jason.
There's a picture of the 83 Corvette analog dashboard. So for those of you who want to go back and watch, check it on the video. It's 20 minutes in right now and the YouTube doesn't get edited. So what else do we have? Let's see here. So the article I read was, yeah, I guess you're right there, Derek or Jason. But man, this Corvette had 2 miles on it with this dashboard. So what else do we have? Why do we have things? Why do we have, I know I put up a bunch of pictures. Why do we have manual transmissions? Why do we have roundabouts? Why do we have, and I saw the coolest one the other day. Where was I driving through? I was in Mississippi, Cambridge. I think I was either in Cambridge or Philadelphia, Mississippi. I think it was Cambridge, Mississippi. It was white, chrome everywhere, chrome wheels, chrome axles. The best California leaned squat, whatever you want to call it, Chevy pick 'em up. I almost stopped and took a picture.
You should have. We need to start doing that. We gotta start taking pictures of stuff like that because it's just, there's a great question. Why do we have the whatever it is called, the California lean, the Carolina squat, the Doberman dragging his butt? I don't know.
There's actually at least two different YouTube videos that explain where it came from and why it exists.
I have not seen those YouTube videos. So here is my take. Somebody had a truck and trailer. And they have no clue. It was their first truck and trailer. They know nothing about trailering. And they overloaded the trailer, squatted the back of the truck so bad, they stood back and looked at it and went, huh, man, that looks cool. I got to do that. And therefore, we have the truck squat. Is that what it was?
See, I don't watch the videos. I actually learned about the videos while I was kind of setting up for this show.
Oh.
But it never made sense to me. I, back in the 80s when we did our lowrider pickups, it was common to see the reverse Carolina lean because you could buy your lowering blocks or your axle flip kit for $50.
Oh, yeah.
And drop the back of your truck, no problem. The front was always expensive and complicated unless you had torsion bars. And it, I mean, I saw a lot of trucks with the nose in the air, the rear end all squat. I guess the rear end squatted. Well,
so it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, I guess that maybe that is where I think
the trick is, though, that was just on like standard trucks.
Yeah.
The problem with the lean is they jack the front up as well. Yeah. They lift the front, lower the back.
Yeah, it's because you could lower the back for nothing, and it always costs money to lower the front. So you got that, the Carolina lean. Now they spend all this money and put the lift kit on the front. I guess they can't afford the rear lift kit.
Yeah.
I wonder if they adjust the pinion angle.
Well, I like Jason's question. Like, doesn't that negate the oil getting to the front of the engine? Some of the ones I've seen, you would think it's so severely leaned back. Who cares about engine oil? Come on.
Well, engine oil, coolant, brake fluid.
That's why you need your electric, you know, your Silverado E's and your Ford Lightnings. See, because you can do that and you don't have to worry about the oil getting to the front of the engine.
Yeah, when I interviewed Matt DeAndrea late last year, he's got a new Lightning. He learned the other day how much of a bath he's taken on it price wise, and he actually paid sticker for his. Ooh. But he said, you know, if he ever did custom wheels, et cetera, for it, they would have to be almost exactly the same because of how well each wheel's monitored. And now I've read he's doing custom wheels for his truck, but he's having them manufactured exact same diameter. The overall tire and that will not change. The sidewall height will change, but the overall diameter will not alter one bit because the truck has to monitor all of this stuff to know range and braking and acceleration. And I imagine, you know, I would assume that truck even has the you know, one foot operation or whatever, where you never have to touch the brake pedal like a lot of the EVs do now. But no, I don't know why we have the Carolina lean.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's, you know, John and I are sitting here saying we don't know why it exists, right? We don't understand the premise of it and people's reasoning for it. But going back to my issues with Facebook and some of the posts lately, I'm also getting aggravated with people that can't handle the collector car world outside of their niche in the collector car world. There's a couple Brass Era guys that get online and all they can complain about is how the Brass Era cars are, you know, nobody appreciates them. And, you know, the hobby's dying because young kids don't care and all of this. And John and I might sit here and say, we don't understand the Carolina lean, but I appreciate that those kids, that younger generation is still into vehicles. They're doing something that I don't understand with their vehicles, but you know what? They're at least, if they're not doing the work themselves, they're at least passionate enough to have the work done to make them have a vehicle that is individualized to them. And that means they're interested in the car world. So, you know, it's still part of this collector car world, and that's great. And I'm glad that this younger generation is into this. And John and I might not understand why they do it. I mean, heck, when I was a kid, I wouldn't have understood why John was running around in slammed mini trucks. But, you know, it's to each their own, and, you know, it's cool and it's great. And they like trucks and they like doing what they're doing to their trucks and their other vehicles that they do the lean on. John and I just don't quite understand why. I don't know why you want to look at the sky instead of the road, but.
And we do kind of make fun of it, or we question it, but we question a lot of things. I don't understand stanced cars. I don't understand. I guess I don't even like airbag mini trucks. I want static drop. I don't want to be able to adjust the ride height and that, even though I kind of understand why we do it, but I'm not going to knock you for whatever you have. I mean, I'm going to question But more of the questioning is why. And I've always thought the Carolina Lean trucks didn't look good. But then the one that I saw in Mississippi just the other day, earlier this week, it actually looked pretty good. I'm still sitting there going, I don't understand why. And then, of course, with my automotive mechanical knowledge, it does go back to like Jason's question. Where does the oil go? How does the oil go? Where is the oil pump? Where is the fuel pickup? I mean, you have to keep these things with 3/4 of a tank of gas so they don't run out. You know, it's stuff I don't understand. But if I was to have a conversation or approach somebody, I would hope they could answer it and not take it as an insult for my questioning. Just like when people would ask me about my CRX at a car show and, 1992, when nobody, especially in the Midwest, understood hot rod Hondas. It's, you can't, like I said, if I wasn't the person I am and didn't really give a damn about anybody but me, I wouldn't be a car guy anymore just because of the way I was treated, because I didn't have cars that were the accepted norm. And I think we've touched on this quite often lately, and it's, we have to embrace the hobby. And Derek's Brass Era reference, that era's dying, but I can't tell you the last time somebody tried to convince me why, other than Derek, why this stuff's cool or why, it needs to exist. And we're going to get to this, pre-war stuff's going to be like that, then the, immediate post-war stuff. And at some point, our 55 Chevys and our 57 Chevys are going to be like that. There's a point here in 50 years that people are going to really wonder why we need to have any sort of gasoline-powered car. Because while we might not be electric, we might be hydrogen, we might be air propulsion, who knows? But there's going to be a point that the internal combustion engine sunsets. And a few years later, people are going to wonder why. It's a good analogy I always hear is of the horse. Horses were our main type of transportation for thousands of years. The advent of the automobile pushed them off the streets that they used to command. And now they're used on, they're a plaything of not necessarily the rich, but those that can afford a luxury. And that's the way gasoline cars, I think, will eventually become. And we'll have our places that we can exercise them and use them. I mean, you can ride a horse down a road still. And when I'm in, let's say, Tennessee, I see a lot of Amish in that with their buggies and their horses and going to Walmart for some reason, We can't have a damn car, but we can go to Walmart. But we look at them odd. And there's going to be a point that it's going to be the Amish with their orange triangles. And then it's going to be us with our gasoline-powered cars and the pods just passing us all on the interstate at 1,000 miles an hour because they're all going to be connected. We and our collectible gasoline cars might become as annoying as sometimes when you come up behind a bicyclist or a horse and buggy in that. There's a romance. You get annoyed
when that happens?
Usually they're pretty respectful.
I just love it. I'm sorry. I'm also the guy that used to live just, in a part of Ohio that has a large, I'm trying to remember, Mennonite community.
Yeah, I believe it would be Mennonite because we had Mennonites.
They're the largest Mennonite community, but they still horse and buggy. And we lived in a historic house, 1825. And to me, there was nothing better. We were on a back road. There was nothing better on a winter evening with the fireplace going, sitting there, maybe reading a book, whatever. And a horse and buggy went by the house. I mean, I love that. But then again, I'm a little old man and I like to complain about things. So John, get off my lawn.
Well, what about roundabouts?
You said roundabout and I let you go off on the other topic and we got on some sidetracks here, but roundabouts they don't bother me so long as people understand how to use them. I think they're simple. What is aggravating me more, and I'll let you talk about roundabouts, but what is aggravating me more is why do we need these? I think they're calling them diverging diamond intersections. To me, this is the stupidest thing somebody's come up with at the, you know, I don't know if it's the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration or somebody else. I don't know, but this diverging diamond intersection is ridiculous in my opinion.
I drove through one of those on the way to the beach in Florida a couple of weeks ago. And it had, when we went through it on a Friday, 6 police cars to help guide people through it. The signs were, you know, if you actually stopped and read the signs how to use it, you were going to be in there for 20 minutes. And you had police waving and stopping people. And when we went back through it, returning on Sunday, there were no cops there. And what a cluster it was. I mean, people were pulling in and turning, you know, you're supposed to go in this pattern, and then people are turning against that pattern. It was kind of like figure eight racing.
But that is exactly the way to explain it.
But you have two groups that are running opposite directions mm-hmm. while figure eight racing. And it roundabouts kind of make sense to me. I've heard of some pretty, you know, there's one somewhere in Germany that actually has train lanes, bicycle lanes, motorcycle lanes, car lanes, and somehow they all converge and slide together.
And there are the roundabouts that can be confusing, but if they're built well and they have the right, you know, kind of entrance lanes that are curved into them, they flow pretty well. I think Americans are starting to get the hang of it.
But we're not building them right.
Well, exactly.
Because the idea of a roundabout is to keep traffic flowing and eliminate stop signs. The problem is we build our roundabouts too small. You know, we try to put them in the same area that four-way intersection was. So there's no room for people to keep moving and merge in and merge out. You still have to come to a stop, wait for traffic to clear, and then drive in a circle. You've got to realize these things take space, and you need more room for them than what was there before. And of course, we're putting these in places that already have gas stations and buildings and stuff on all four corners. So they just don't work in this country because our country was not built for them, nor was our driver's ed.
Yeah. The problem I have with the diverging diamond, and I'm complaining about this because I was on vacation last week traveling throughout Michigan, Indiana, and Kentucky, and just, you know, kind of enjoying some time off with the family. But I got off the freeway. I think we had to stop for gas or something. I don't remember what it was, but, you know, get off and I'm coming down, of course, area I'd never been in before, come off the ramp, and there's a light at the bottom, and there's nothing telling me that the road I am trying to turn onto is a diverging diamond intersection. Okay. So I pull up and I look over to my, you know, you do your check the left to make sure there's nothing coming. And of course, the way I'm looking down the road, there's absolutely no traffic. I'm like, cool. And legally you can turn on red. There was no sign saying no turn on red. So I take my foot off the brake, do a double check. And that's when I realize it's a diverging diamond. And I've got a whole bunch of traffic coming at me extremely fast at a 45 degree angle coming out of the diverging diamond that I almost pulled out in front of, because no signage telling me where the traffic was coming from. If I did my standard look down the road, I saw no traffic. I was like, what is this? Is ridiculously dangerous.
No, it's some traffic just flat doesn't make sense, and why they create things like that. I have one intersection I travel on, and again, it's in Tennessee, where you come and you meet another road, and it's like a Y intersection when you're on this road coming into the Y, but you come in almost parallel to the other portion of the Y, and you're going into the tail of the Y. So when you look over to the right, you can't see anything. You can't see the traffic that's traveling the same direction as you. And why did we have to? No, no pun intended with all the whys here. Why did we have to meet like this? Why couldn't we went back 100 feet and made a little right turn that brought you, you know, perpendicular to the road so you could look right and left safely? No, we've got to come into this crazy area here. And then there's another one. And Jason might actually, well, I think it's near Jasper, Alabama, that you're going down the road and you, the main road, it again, it's a Y intersection. If you go straight, you actually change roads, but the highway actually goes to the left and you don't have a stop sign, but the oncoming traffic has a stop sign. And it just, it's always an uncomfortable situation or feeling when you're going through that, because you have traffic coming at you that's supposed to stop. You got traffic coming the other direction on the Y. They have a turn lane that's coming towards you that wants to merge into you. It just, I don't know. All I see is zipper merge, and God, yeah. let's not even go there.
Merge is a very hopeful word here. As the old saying goes, I'm not sure you quite understand what that word means.
But he's right. We need to learn zipper merge before we start introducing roundabouts.
The big problem here, and here, I'll ask another why question, John. I'll throw one out to you. Why has America gotten so far away from having appropriate driver's training?
You know,
that is what we need. We don't need to teach people how to zipper merge. We don't need to teach people how to use diverging diamond or a roundabout. We need to teach them driver's education.
Well, if you taught them driver's education, the zipper merge would be included in it. And you know, my feeling on this, and that's the 4-digit fee for driver's licenses every year. And you know, if you've gone an entire year without any incidents, without any insurance claims, yeah, you should get you get all these credits, which would drop your driver's license to virtually free. But the people that are getting tickets and the people that are getting are being involved in accidents and things like that, they're the ones that start paying higher and higher rates. But we've got to at least test people every 2 years. I still think every year. People go, how are you going to pay for it? Well, I'm going to pay for it because it's $2,500 for your driver's license, unless you're absolutely perfect. And I mean, if you have no issues whatsoever, et cetera, and you show up for your renewal, it's a $500 fee still. And then you take your test. And if you ace your test, you know, if you get a 92 on your test, you get 92% off that 500. If you get a 70 on your test, you get 70% off that 500. If you get less than a 70, go home, do not pass go, and bring back $200, exactly. You know. And yeah, that's unfair to people that don't have money, but it's fair to people that don't have money, because if you're responsible and you care, I find it odd that when I drive through a Target parking lot, it's usually a lot more controlled than a Walmart parking lot where there's people driving. You know, they'll sit there as you're going down the lane following the arrows so that they can turn and go the wrong direction.
Yeah, of course. Duh. But that, and there's the thing, if you look at a parking lot layout and you yourself are comparing Target to Walmart, Walmart has diagonal parking, right? They've got the 45-ish degree parking diagonal, whereas Target is, you know, 90 degree straight pull in. So it doesn't matter which way you go up and down the aisle, right? All of the aisles are two-way traffic. So it makes sense to people.
But you don't get them driving across, you know, the middle of, you know, they finish their aisle and turn. Unless, okay, the last four spots, I give you. You give that in any parking lot. But people who like to go zipping 60 miles an hour across your Walmart parking lot to get from the Pizza Hut on one side of Walmart to the whatever they call their gas stations this week, and with no regard to any cross traffic that really has kind of the right of way. Talk to Brandy about me and pulling through spots and entering, you know, you pull in, you back out, you don't pull through. Just, I don't know.
Oh, why? Jason just brought up one that's been driving me crazy lately too, that I forgot about. These cities and different areas that have reverse in only angled parking. Have you seen this, John?
Actually, I almost mentioned it before Jason in Walmart, because I think that's the way Walmart parking lots should be. They're already angled, and I think they should require you to reverse into the spots.
So basically, you're saying go down the aisle the opposite way that they currently are, and then you back into the spot.
Yep. And I see, I like that parking. I like cities that do that, that you back into the spot. It's safer when you're exiting, and you have a much clearer and better view when you're backing into the spot. Now, unfortunately, you're trying to back between two cars as opposed to an open area. And again, people can't drive. They can't back up their damn cars. I bet you if I look out the window of the studio here, there's this, my neighbor, she's got this new Lexus SUV. And I argued and argued and argued with the complex to get them to paint white lines. And the lines were so faded, you couldn't see them. But rain, absolutely, they were invisible. She uses the auto parking feature of her Lexus. When the complex came through and they painted these lines, they painted the ones that there weren't cars near. So we've got some bright white ones and we've got some faded ones. And nice. She uses her auto parking. And if she does that, she's never on top of a white line. If she parks between two white lines, she's perfectly square. If she parks between two white lines with a faded line in between them, the right side of her car is on that line because people can't park. And it's just, it drives me nuts, because if she misses her spot by a quarter of a car, then like somebody came home yesterday and parked next to her. And guess what? Now they're a half a spot off. And by the time you go two or three cars down, you lost two parking spots. And parking's tight around here because some people violate the lease and have too many cars.
John. So... What I'll go and if anybody from my hometown listens that still lives there, I apologize, but I think most of us felt that this was ridiculous when they did it. And I don't know how people still feel back home. I still think it's ridiculous when I visit, but in my hometown, on one of the streets, they didn't do it, fortunately, on all of the streets where there's parking. Well, actually, I should say there's two streets they did it on. In right downtown, they took, and the road used to do what most normal roads in towns do, right? They go through the middle of the town, and there's pull-in parking normally on a 45 in front of the businesses, right? You see where I'm going here, John? Okay.
Yep.
Well, for some reason, I think it was maybe when I was like, it might have been junior, senior year of high school. They came through, they redid all the roads. And for some reason, now the lanes of the street drive in front of the businesses by the sidewalk, and the 45-degree parking is all in the middle of the street. Now, when you're driving down the road and you go to park, yeah, it's okay because you just kind of pull into the parking spot, right? But it's in the middle of the road. So now you get out. You have to walk across traffic to get to the business location you're going to. And then when you come out, you walk across traffic to get back into your car. And then, you know, hopefully if you own, I don't know, a 93 Beretta and, you know, one of the local farmers is in town with their F-350 parked next to you, you have no chance of seeing what's coming when you're trying to back out. Now, it's the same situation if you're obviously parked the other way, but there's just so many other drawbacks to the idea. I can't tell you how many times I drove through town and, you know, especially with younger kids, I have two young kids now. They like to run when they get out of a car. And now you've got these vehicles parked in the middle of a street and the kid gets out and goes running for the restaurant or, you know, the barber shop or wherever store they're going to. They're running across traffic. They're not running up to a sidewalk. They're running across traffic to get to the sidewalk in the store. It's just never made sense to me why my hometown did that. I don't know if anybody else has ever seen that in another town. I don't think I've ever come across it in another town. But if somebody can explain it to me, that'd be wonderful.
I've been in towns like that, and it's Midwest, because I want to say it was Illinois and that. I don't see any of that here in the Southeast. I can't explain why they do it, except I don't know, except maybe it keeps the bus lanes clear.
My hometown does not have bus lanes. My hometown is a very small village in the middle of nowhere, Michigan. And it's literally just a 2-lane road.
Jason said that, you know, Walmart just needs to be a drive-through, no parking spots. What I spent a lot of time in parking lots, especially at Walmart's, Target's, Best Buy, you know, shopping centers. I have this parking concept, and you're going to lose a few spaces. And maybe I should talk to my ex-wife about it, because back early in her architecture career, she designed parking decks. But if you took Walmart and instead of pulling in and parking facing another car with no space between you, if it was one row of spaces, a drive lane, one row of spaces, a drive lane, a one row of spaces, a drive lane, one row of spaces, a drive lane. You lose one row of parking through the whole parking lot, but they're pull in and then you could back out or pull through. Basically, they're all pull through spots. You pull in, you pull out, and you never have to even put the car in reverse, which reversing is one of the most dangerous things you can do in a car, to be honest. Even with cross traffic alert, et cetera. And I've had many cars with cross traffic alert, and it doesn't work when people are speeding through the parking lot. 20 miles an hour, yeah, it works. 60 miles an hour, nah, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's just one of these things that, you know, me and my, you know, straight out of 12th grade into junior college education kind of says, this makes more sense than what everybody's been doing. But we're trying all this new stuff. You know, Derek's favorite diamond traffic intersections and roundabouts and back in and, you know, whatever else we have. Why can't we try a couple parking lots that are pull through spaces? I mean, that's what we like to do. We love to hit a spot and get back in our car and then be able to pull straight through to the other side and drive out. It's just simplifying it and making it easier.
John, I have one question for you. Name me one. Because things like this are, you know, they take, you know, development, design, committees, you know, people like that, you know, things coming together and working together to do this. Tell me one function in the United States where common sense wins.
Well, that's the problem with common sense. It's not so common.
I rest my case. I'm sure Jason was saying crickets to make the crickets sound while we were pondering when common sense actually works. But I mean, I think crickets might be the only thing that makes common sense, or the only actually. I mean,
no, but I mean, you could run for office on it if you got all the parking lot striping companies behind you. There'd be a lot of money in it for them to come and restripe all the parking lots into this.
Man.
And I guess
parking lot stripers union.
I'm going to say this has been tried. I realized this has been tried back when Target first started doing their curbside stuff back in 2020. They came up with parking lot. Their drive through was they took two spots and then they had arrows painted. You pulled in one side and you drove all the way through and stopped in the second spot. And then somebody could pull in behind you. And then depending when your order, you could have backed out or went forward. But so many people would pull in halfway and then somebody would pull in the other side. You know, nobody ever understood that you're supposed to pull, even though it's all painted and signage. And now all the Target curbside pickup spots are regular parking spots. So yep. I guess we've tried it. And even the Target people weren't smart enough, or excuse me, the Target people weren't smart enough to figure this out. With signage.
No, the people who go to Target are not smart enough to figure out. Those that go to Target are, and they're the ones that are mad at the Target people.
Probably.
Although one of the ones I go to, they also have orange cones like between, so you don't, I don't know, hopefully you don't pull like too far to one side. I don't know why, but I had to stop by and pick up a order that my wonderful wife ordered. We needed some things for the kids. And, it wasn't terribly busy when I was there. Turns out they're set up very nicely for a little slalom course. You know, I had to go around a few things because I wasn't where I wanted to be. And I just kind of whoop, whoop, threw a few of them and then pulled into the spot. It was kind of fun.
As long as you don't get cone juice on the old car.
I'm better than that, John.
La-di-da.
And I'm gonna ask the big question, John. I'm gonna ask the big question because we're talking about why things exist. Why does no driving gloves exist?
So we can bitch about things.
Yeah, exactly.
Join me for my new podcast, The Itch, with a very creative logo.
Ooh.
That one's not out yet, but I'm gonna wrap it there. I mean, we're around that 1 hour mark. And Jason's right. Any of these ideas would work if people had more courteous with one another. And we covered that a few episodes ago on why can't we all get along? You know, it's not all about being first. Sometimes it's better to be last.
Usually.
You know, sometimes first will kill you.
Very true. Very true.
I want to be first. I want to be first. You get to be the first person in the ground.
Yep.
But we did launch Automobiles Alabama. It's kind of a sister podcast to No Driving Gloves, where we're going to talk about the cars and car people of Alabama, which if you hang with us, you're going to find out it's a much more exciting podcast than what that sounds like. Oh, Automobiles Alabama. It's about hay wagons and John Deere's. Well, it might be. It also might be about McLarens and Bugattis and Koenigseggs. You'd be surprised.
Ooh.
I know that it's going to be about some, I can't think of the Rolls Royce model that we're going to cover. It's from like 12.
The Silver Wraith.
No, we're talking 14, 16 era Rolls. We're talking some nice ass shit in this state. But
I feel like I need to just come down for a visit.
You probably should.
If you're going to be talking about those kind of cars, that's my jam.
You would love some of these collections. Follow Mob Inc.
I already have. They even liked me back, John. I think they figured out who I was.
you should catch a couple of the videos they recently put up of a couple of these car collections.
I've seen a few of them. I like it. Yeah.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to say, so what John is saying is that the no driving gloves world is growing a bit. John himself is bringing out some podcasts. We've got some more news coming up over the next few weeks, both on John's end of things and my end of things. And so we want to see the no driving gloves community grow. And hopefully with everything John's doing there in Alabama, some of the things I'm going to be doing up here in the Kentucky, Tennessee region will help out with that. And with all that being said, John's already said that we are at that hour mark. So guys,
and gal,
help us. And I'm from the North. I use guys kind of as that. And I've learned that it's a bad thing, but I don't feel like I can properly say you all, right? Cause I'm not from the South originally.
No, you can say you all. That's a Northern thing. Y'all. Now that you're not.
No, Northern is you guys. You know that. No, all right, you guys.
No, I've always been all encompassing.
All right, whatever. I don't believe it. Okay, so scratch that. Let me start over. So everybody that is already listening to No Driving Gloves, we want to grow the community. We want you guys to help us with that. So as I always wrap up the show, help us grow. Share the show. Enjoy.
Yeah. Give us a like. Ring that little bell. Subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. Whatever all that stuff is. You know what to do. You don't need us to tell you. Other than the show's over. So it's time to get off your ass. Go burn some gas. Because we are out.